have to blow the computer.
ELF. Freedom Radio.
Greetings. It is Saturday, November 8th, 2012. Welcome to Episode 2 of Commander X Speaks.
Organization known as Anonymous, a loose-knit group of computer hackers who came to the defense of WikiLeaks and got the attention of law enforcement in the process. They are young and stealthy, and they are potential giant killers.
Anonymous hacktivists, hacker activists, have basically gotten together and are exacting revenge for what they see as attacks on WikiLeaks, and they're targeting a number of corporations that have cut off their ties with WikiLeaks.
So they see themselves as protesters. Essentially that the government can't prevent you or I from talking openly. They interpret it much more broadly. They believe that everybody has an inalienable right to say whatever they want on any forum whatsoever.
Now today, this group of computer hackers are apparently threatening cyber war over this WikiLeaks case. What do you know about that?
The NBC is reporting that Anonymous, it's a group we've heard of before, is threatening new attacks, not only on U.S. Corporations, but also on some of the government officials.
Number one story, MasterCard announced Monday it would no longer process payments to WikiLeaks. This morning, internet activists crashed its website. This afternoon, Visa.com crashed. Tonight, Twitter might be next. It suspended an Operation Payback account. The group calling itself Anonymous has been waging Operation Payback for a few months now. Group says it is dedicated to a, quote, anonymous, decentralized movement that fights against censorship and copy wrong.
Well, officials have confirmed that at least 41 Malaysian government websites had been hacked overnight. This follows a threat by hacker group Anonymous to punish the authorities for internet censorship. Officials say that 51 websites were hit, at least 41 of them were disrupted in these attacks.
Targets like HP Gary, a major cybersecurity firm some U.S. government agencies rely on to keep their computers safe. Last month, HP Gary boasted it would expose Anonymous. The response was swift. Anonymous took down their website, stole thousands of emails, and posted them on the internet. The CEO resigned. Anonymous is credited with bringing down government websites in Tunisia, Egypt, and Libya. And now it's made new threats against companies and government officials complicit in what it views as the mistreatment of Bradley Manning, the Army private accused of leaking to WikiLeaks.
Anonymous is powerful enough that it's certainly struck fear into the hearts of some of the biggest technology companies, the biggest companies in the whole world.
Our own Justice Department doesn't take any action against these guys. It's been 3 years since the debacle in Wall Street that caused our economic collapse. And where's Washington? Where's Washington? They haven't done a damn thing. But look, what you're looking at here, in combination of all these things, is a new model on how to fight back. You have to take action into your hands. Direct, peaceful resistance.
We decided long ago that the dangers of excessive and unwarranted concealment of pertinent facts far outweighed the dangers which are cited to justify it. And there is very grave danger that an announced need for increased security will be seized upon by those anxious to expand its meaning to the very limits of official censorship and concealment. That I do not intend to permit to the extent that it's in my control. For we are opposed around the world by a monolithic and ruthless conspiracy that relies primarily on covert means for expanding its sphere of influence, on infiltration instead of invasion, on subversion instead of elections, on intimidation instead of free choice, on guerrillas by night instead of armies by day. It is a system which has conscripted vast human and material resources into the building of a tightly knit, highly efficient machine that combines military, diplomatic, intelligence, economic, scientific, and political operations. Its preparations are concealed, not published. Its mistakes are buried, not headlined. Its dissenters are silenced, not praised. No expenditure is questioned, no rumor is printed, no secret is revealed.
Uh-oh, SpaghettiOs, you could be in a lot of trouble. Now, people have figured out that you can hit the powerful where it counts in their pocketbooks. The same thing happened in Egypt, where Mubarak only stepped down after the labor strikes began. And then there's a national and international movement against the power establishment. The group Anonymous recently released this video warning the global banking systems.
We are a decentralized, non-violent resistance movement which seeks to restore the rule of law and fight back against the organized criminal class.
Now that's a little spooky. I liked it. And apparently they came armed with documents, which we're going to tell you about in a second. But look, what I like is peaceful resistance.
However, they just can't. They can't just randomly launch an attack. And in order to do it, a compelling case for the target, and then whoever happens to be, it's a quorum of whoever happens to be awake, can vote up or down on this target. So if somebody has not made a compelling enough case, enough people may pull their computers off of this voluntary botnet that the attack might not be nearly as effective. So it is, in fact, an amazing kind of Athenian democracy. If you forget sort of the ethics of what they're doing, place that to one side. What they've achieved is sort of this set of checks and balances that agrees in a very fluid way on what the target is.
This is the new model of fighting back against the establishment and against corporate power. Don't wait for your knight in shining armor to show up from D.C. The bad news is he ain't coming. The good news is it turns out you're the knight in shining armor.
I believe that Gandhi's views were the most enlightened of all the political men in our time. We should strive to do things in his spirit, not to use violence in fighting for our cause, but by non-participation in anything you believe is evil.
Next is, all they can do is shut down the internet itself. And we see how that went for them in Egypt. And we the people know that when the government shuts down the internet, that's when it's time to shut down the government. We are Anonymous. We are Legion. We do not forgive. We do not forget. Expect us. And now, you can expect a whole lot more.
This is Commander X. Thank you for tuning in to episode 2 of Commander X Speaks. I have some fantastic music and interesting audio queued up, and we will have a very special guest. Activist attorney Jay Wiedemann will join me for a chat. As most of you may know, Jay has become known in the past couple of years as the sort of unofficial lawyer for Anonymous. And given the news this week, I predict we'll have plenty to talk about. We'll begin tonight's show with the news in the world of cyber activism this past week. In the world of Anonymous, there are a few ops this past week that seem to be most active. Op Hunt Hunter is a controversial but very active op that has been making headlines all week. Elements of Anonymous have launched an op targeting the former revenge porn king Hunter Moore, whose former site allowed you to post pornographic images and videos of former lovers whom you might have a grudge against. After numerous legal battles, Moore sold the domain to an anti-bullying group. Recently, he announced his intention to launch a similar venture called Hunter Moore TV, whose exact purpose seems a bit obtuse, but seems to be geared towards giving online bullies a multimedia platform from which to torture their targets. Anonymous went on the offensive this week, targeting his new site first with a brief DDoS, and then rooting his servers and dumping the entire contents, leaving behind a defaced front page. While the op has made headlines all week, it has not been without its controversy, with several old fags remarking on the irony of the internet hate machine targeting the king of online hate. Another op that has been active this week goes by a couple of names, either OpITU or OpWCIT, and it is targeting the International Telecommunications Union and the World Conference on International Telecommunications, which is taking place this week in Dubai. It is tasked with deciding the future of internet regulation. Oh my. While most of the more restrictive and controversial proposals made at the conference and its general organization appear to have almost no chance of passage, Anonymous has gone on the offensive to highlight the incredibly non-transparent and undemocratic way the ITU set the agenda for the conference behind closed doors and with no input from either the public or corporate service providers. On Thursday, Anonymous took down one of the WCIT-related websites that was geared towards providing important material for the conference attendees and appears to cause quite a bit of inconvenience and disruption during the day's session. And finally, there is Operation Vatican. Op Vatican was launched in October of this year after it was announced that the Pope's butler, Paolo Gabriel, and the Vatican internet tech Claudio Scarpaletti were arrested over the leak of a huge trove of documents directly from the Pope's apartment. The documents were turned over to an Italian author who used them as a basis for a book disclosing massive corruption and wrongdoing in the highest levels of the Holy See. Scarpaletti was sentenced to 2 months for his rather small role in the disclosure, and as per a treaty, he will serve his time in an Italian prison as the Vatican City-State does not have one of those prison thingies. Gabriel was sentenced to 1.5 years, and the Vatican, being nervous over what additional secrets he may reveal, chose to build him a special and unique cell within the walls of Vatican City State, which means he is essentially the only prisoner in the Vatican and is effectively being held in solitary confinement. The Pope, being an absolute monarch, has the power to free both of these men with the stroke of a pen, and Anonymous is demanding he do so before Christmas so they can be home with their families. Let's give a listen to what Anonymous Vatican released this week.
Greetings, world. The People's Liberation Front and Anonymous are joining forces yet again to defend whistleblowers and fight for transparency in government, this time in the most unlikely of places, the Vatican City State. This spring, a book was published which detailed massive corruption and wrongdoing in the highest levels of the Pope's administration. It was entitled His Holiness by Gianluigi Nuzzi. The book relied heavily on a massive cache of documents apparently leaked directly from the Pope's apartment and office at the Holy See. In May of this year, Paolo Gabriel, the Pope's butler, was arrested for photocopying the massive trove of documents and delivering them to Nuzzi for use in his book. Today, Mr. Gabriel was convicted by the Vatican courts and sentenced to 18 months in an Italian prison for this alleged disclosure of sensitive and secret material. The fact that Paolo Gabriel was almost certainly aided by someone high up in the Vatican government, most likely a cardinal, was never investigated by the Vatican police. Instead, Mr. Gabriel was given a very quick trial in a Vatican City courtroom and summarily sentenced to a year and a half in prison. The computer technician Claudio Sapelletti has been convicted of assisting in the disclosure and has been sentenced to 2 months. Anonymous and the People's Liberation Front will not stand by while whistleblowers who expose corruption in governments or corporations are persecuted and imprisoned. Whether it be Bradley Manning in the USA or Paolo Gabriel in the Vatican City State, risking everything to bring transparency to the world is an act of extreme heroism and deserves to be defended at all costs. The Pope is an absolute monarch, and as such has the ability to instantly pardon Paolo Gabriel and Claudio Sapelletti. We demand that the Pope do so at once. Until this one simple demand is met, Anonymous and the PLF will wage a relentless campaign. We will also work closely with Anonymous Italy to organize ground protests in St. Peter's Square, especially during outdoor papal audiences. The Roman Catholic Church should have nothing to hide, and nothing to fear from transparency. Free Paolo Gabriel now. We are Anonymous. We are everywhere. We are Legion. We do not forgive. We do not forget. Your Holiness Benedict XVI, it is too late to expect us.
Our Vatican was reinvigorated this week when it was announced by the Vatican that the Pope now has a Twitter account, @Pontifex. And will send his first tweet in person on December 12th. The Vatican conveniently provided a couple of hashtags for people to interact with His Holiness on that day, and I believe that Anonymous has some plans of their own for the Pope's inaugural tweet. Anyone interested in joining with us in Op Vatican, join the IRC at chat.anonset.com, port number 6697, and the channel is, of course, Op Vatican. Or you can go to the main website for the op, which is www.operationvatican.tk, and click the IRC link for WebChat. We're going to do a musical break now, and then we'll be back with tonight's special guest. This is the Grateful Dead performing New Minglewood Blues live in Anaheim, California.
Thank you. reason. Some says I am, some says I ain't. Doctor call me crazy. Some says I am, some says I ain't. Rich man call me sinner, but his little girl call me a saint. Couple shots of whiskey, women around here start looking good. Couple shots of whiskey, these dizzy minis start looking good. Couple shots of whiskey, I'm going down to be good. Stealing women. from the other end. And I'll do it again. Yeah, I'm a number one occupation. Stealing humans from that other end.
With this week's announcement that a much-beloved anon that goes by the pseudonym Nerdo was convicted of conspiracy for the Op Avenge Assange attacks on PayPal and MasterCard, with three other anons having already pled guilty to similar charges, and then last night's breaking news that Barrett Brown, already incarcerated for a YouTube video he posted, had been indicted on a dozen additional charges related to the Stratfor hack, tonight's guest seems particularly appropriate. Jay Lederman has been an activist lawyer, spending the majority of his successful career working in the contentious field of medical marijuana. He co-authored the seminal book on the subject entitled Medical Marijuana Law in California with his law partner, James Devine. A couple of years ago, Jay reached out to those in Anonymous who at the time were just beginning to feel the heat of unjust law enforcement actions. Since that time, he has worked tirelessly and for free to defend some of the most notorious and infamous Anons, from Barrett Brown to, well, yours truly. He has made himself constantly available to Anons all over the world who consult with him on a daily basis. And so it is my humble and great honor to welcome to Commander X Speaks, Jay Lederman. Welcome, Jay.
Hey, thanks for having me, X.
Hey, it's great to have you on the show. I think we should, in the interests of transparency, reveal to our listening audience that not only are you my criminal attorney, but also a very dear friend. So we'll have put that out there so that all the listeners understand where we're coming from. So it's been quite a week in the Anonymous legal scene. I think we'll kind of take it in chronological order, actually. I want to talk about Rabbite. Now, if I understand right, he wasn't actually associated with Anonymous. Is that correct?
I don't think. I mean, Weave is the nickname. Rabbite, at Rabbite, is the Twitter account. I don't think Weave considers himself a member of Anonymous. Of course, the central problem with Anonymous is defining it. So I don't know.
But he never actually
said he's anonymous. He could deny he's anonymous. Everyone
but
can say he's not a member, and of course, law enforcement can pop up and say he's anonymous.
But did he or anybody ever associate him with Anonymous? I mean, that wasn't actually just part of the case.
No.
And he, okay. So
no.
The fundamental is, this kid is convicted of clicking on a URL. Am I right or am I wrong? I mean, because that's what's been, you know, the talk of the town, so to speak. Give us what was he accused of, and what did he really do?
Let me see if I can explain it. In the light that I understand it, it was two counts associated with the same course of behavior. And what it was that he and a partner of his, who went by the online nick Jackson Brown and actually pled out and became a witness against Weave, they found out that with the original iPad, that there was a, if I'm understanding this right, and if not, I'm sure millions of people will be happy to correct me over and over again, but there were essentially like web pages associated with unique iPads that you can get into your iPad's own website, and you can do things like, for example, remotely wipe it and things like that, but you can control your iPad that way on the original ones. And what it was it was a really simple URL that Apple gave to its users. So if you knew one of the URLs, I mean, essentially the way Apple did it was that, say the URL for your iPad, you bought the first one ever, was, you know, www.apple.com/iPad/1. It was more complex than that, but, you know, overly simplified, let's say that. What they did was they took that URL, went into a browser and deleted the one and put in two and figured out that, well, that was the next iPad, and then put in three and figured out, well, that was the next one. And it, of course, gave all the account details. So they wrote a script, not Weave, but this Jackson Browne apparently wrote a script, or admitted, I think, writing a script that would slurp 10,000-15,000 accounts, basically just by going to websites and taking publicly available information. Where Weave got into trouble was instead of showing this vulnerability in what they had to AT&T, they exposed AT&T, it was AT&T, not Apple, it was AT&T iPads. So either way, but the vulnerability was with AT&T. So they went to Gawker and shot the story to a number of reporters after contacting a number of the people. And of course, a number of the people who had, you know, first run iPads were Mayor Bloomberg and the editor in chief of the New York Times and Diane Sawyer. And
is it true the president
alleged to have?
Is it true the president was
some of them? And figured out the vulnerabilities. Finally, they were taken seriously when you know Gawker published the story, and it was oh shit, your iPads are vulnerable.
Is there any truth to this?
Musk didn't go to he was for collecting publicly available data, convicted of unlawful access to a protected computer, and for, in passing, possessing the database of the email addresses. He was convicted of aggravated identity theft, something that we'll probably talk about with reference to Barrett Browne. But he is now looking at a 2-year mandatory minimum for that identity theft charge.
So no matter what, he's going to do 2 years.
Well, I wouldn't say no matter what. There are ways to get under a mandatory minimum. Obviously, the most common way is by snitching, which is just not going to happen with Weave because he's had his chance and he told them what they can do with themselves. But there are other ways to get under that, no criminal record, things like that. So I don't know what the particulars of that are. I've only talked to Weave's attorney a couple of times. You know, good dude. I think they really tried their best on the case.
Do you know if they plan to appeal?
Yeah, they've already got the appeal in motion, and that was kind of the game plan all along, based upon the evidentiary rulings, is that they knew they would be appealing any decision that went adversely. And it's a real good case for appeal, and if the judge is inclined to leave him out during appeal, I think based upon the law, there's a shot that he gets this reversed and his convictions overturned. You have to think about it this way, right? URLs, the net as we know it was invented, or really came into being, in what, 91, 92?
Mm-hmm.
The Computer Fraud and Abuse Act, CFAA, the one that you were charged under in San Jose X, was written in 1986. So it was written at a time where when you were dialing up a computer, like in war games, you were dialing up a specific computer. You didn't jump on a browser to go to this nebulous cloud that is the internet. You went, directly from your terminal to, DARPA or whatever,
I do know.
I'm saying more, for dummies like me who don't understand this on a technically fundamental level, can understand it in that light because it's, now it's not like that. But it was at the time the law was written. So what is unauthorized access to a computer? Because we had the same argument in your case. We weren't able to make it because of circumstances. We never made any arguments in your case. But still, it's the same argument. What is unauthorized access? Is it terms and conditions of use? There are really no indications anywhere what's going to be authorized or unauthorized. Courts have been willing to assume that DDoS is unauthorized, but this is a very far cry from DDoS.
Okay. Close up on the Weave topic, is there any truth to the rumor that one of the iPads that was exposed belonged to the President of the United States?
Oh, I would... you know me, I'm not so good with my salacious details.
I'm just
would
curious
have to ask
if you
Weave himself.
I heard
that I'd want to do that now with him pending sentencing.
I'd heard a rumor that one of them belonged to Obama. I was just curious if you knew anything about it. All right, so you know, again, this week was just filled with horrible news on the legal front for Anonymous Nerdo and his compatriots. My take on this, and I actually interacted with Nerdo a few times within the collective of Anonymous, and my take on this is the take I always had on Nerdo, that basically he was the admin of the Anonops IRC, really, and that's about all he ever did. I personally never knew him to do anything else but to keep the IRC up and running, and he was very dedicated to doing that. I never knew him to be involved in anything else, and it seems to me, based on the conviction on a single conspiracy charge, that's basically what they convicted him of, is running the Anonops IRC. Give me your take on that case.
Yeah, that's actually my understanding of it as well. Let me make a couple disclaimers here. You know, none of us of the Anon lawyers seem to be, or at least from the communications I've had with everyone, none of us are in touch with the British attorneys. So a lot of what we're getting and what we're sharing amongst each other is really just the same news reports as everyone else. The only difference being, as lawyers, we maybe analyze it a little bit differently. But it's my understanding, and I've, you know, read much of what's available out there, that was central to his defense, what you've just said, that essentially he was running a server, he never clicked go on his LOIC. I don't even know, from the articles I've read, I don't even know that it's alleged that he had a LOIC. But he was charged with conspiracy, and that's the one thing. You know, we haven't been able to pull the substantive statute under the English common law, but we have been able to pull the conspiracy statute, and that's what he was convicted of, is the conspiracy. So your take on the facts and my take on the facts seems to mesh with conspiracy, which is troubling because
it's organizing a protest.
It's part that, and the other part to why that's troubling is because it seems like what he was engaged in is not the direct commission, but more of these, like, preparatory acts, like, you know, mustering together. So if he didn't really, it doesn't seem like he was going directly toward the commission of the act, which is central to American conspiracy law. It seems like he was just talking about things, not, you know, organizing the people, just providing the room.
Okay, we're going to do this protest. Why don't you come and join us? I mean, and essentially that's the parallel. I've always seen my own conspiracy charge as being just that. It's the conspiracy, what they call conspiracy, is what we call organizing a protest. If we'd organized a physical sit-in, in my case at the county courthouse, I'd have gone out, handed out leaflets and flyers, I'd have talked on, you know, the local radio stations, and I'd have got everybody to go down there to the courthouse and lock it down. And so it seems to me that the parallel is what they call conspiracy, we call organizing a protest. Now, I'm troubled by one thing, and this is something that has come up very heavily in the PayPal 14 case, which is tangential to mine. The damages that PayPal claimed, £3.5 million, I don't know what that, I assume that translates to something similar to what they're claiming in the American case.
Strangely enough, it translates within about $100 or so.
Right. So my question is this, though. In the case of the PayPal 14, PayPal is virtually in contempt of court at this point because they've been subpoenaed to provide details of these costs for some time now and have just completely blown it up and not provided the documents to back up this outlandish claim of damages. I know, again, you don't have a lot of the legal details, but did they provide such a numerical account, such an accounting in Nerdo's case? And because I didn't see that. I looked throughout every article I could possibly read, and I didn't see anywhere where PayPal was forced by the British courts to produce, you know, proof of these outlandish damage claims.
No, that's correct, but then again, I wouldn't expect reporters to be reporting on those details because they're not. That's just not the interesting part of the case. So in short, the answer is I don't know.
Yeah, neither do I.
I can't say too much about what's going on in American PayPal because it's all protected by, you know, other people's attorney clients?
Well, I just know it's public. I know it's publicly out there, and I know that PayPal hasn't kicked yet with their accounting. So
right, that's in, you know, to paint it in very, very broad strokes, that's what's happening in the American case soon, maybe. Subpoenas are working their way through with eBay, the parent corporation. Whether that happened in the British case, I do not know. But I don't know how you can sustain a conviction and claim those damages without some type of very strict accounting. I mean, you know, for example, in the Sony case that I'm handling, the Lolsec Sony case in Los Angeles, they didn't give us much in terms of a breakdown. We can go get it if we want. But they gave us enough of a breakdown to know where the monies went. And they didn't claim an outrageous sum like $5.6 million. They claimed what sounds like an outrageous sum, $605,000. And they essentially what they sent us were, you know, one-page letters memorializing billings that were, you know, such and such law firm billed for $200,000. And such computer forensic company billed for $270,000, and such other computer forensic company billed for, you know, $100,000+, and $60,000 was in credit, you know, credit monitoring for the people that were the, you know, the subjects of the data harvest. So at least we had an idea in terms of Sony, whereas PayPal, who, by the way, put on their public statements that there was no loss at all. That's what they put on their public tax filing statements. So PayPal has yet to give any indication of how they came up with that $5.6 million or £3.5 million sum.
Well, it's funny, the parallel to my own case, because just yesterday when I was preparing for the show, I went over and the Santa Cruz Sentinel article that they did the day of the attack is still up. And that it's still linked to my website and it's still up. And the county spokesperson stating that absolutely no damage was done, no servers were breached, it was a brief outage, and everything came back, and everything is fine. And no, quote, unquote, no damage was done. So it sort of pins down, and then all of a sudden they come back with, you know, $6,000 worth of damage that was miraculously done during a 30-minute DDoS. All right, so let's get to the meat of it. Barrett Brown indicted on a dozen charges for the Stratfor hack. Now, you know, you and I both know what's going through the Anon sphere right now. Over and over again, this idea that he, you know, transferred a URL from one IRC to the other. But there's a dozen charges. So tell us, not so much about that, but tell us about the rest of the story. What's the rest of these charges, and how do they relate to the Stratfor hack?
Okay. Let's see. He's charged in 12 counts, the first being possession of, I think it's five pieces of access data for Stratfor. And that's supposedly, according to the language on the grand jury indictment, it appears as though he removed it from a link from a non-ops IRC, and it was pasted to Project PM. Now, I see what's going on around Twitter with people saying that it's, you know, it's just the mere sharing of a link. And if that's the case, and I don't know that it is, but if that's the case, that is a highly, highly troubling charge. If there's nothing more to support it, other than he cut and pasted a link from one place to another place. Barrett being a journalist, this being an incredibly newsworthy thing last Christmas, that's a highly troubling, but we can get into that later. The bulk of the charges are these credit card fraud charges, they're called aggravated identity theft charges. And what they are is 10 different accounts with what are called VVNs. It's that little three-digit code on the back of a credit card.
Mm-hmm.
That's essentially what it is. And those charges are particularly pesky for the following reason. Much like Weave, those things are, it's the same charge. It's 18 U.S.C. 1028, and they carry with them a two-year mandatory minimum per count. So if you think about it that way, before you start imposing penalties on the other counts, if he's convicted of everything, he starts with a presumptive 20-year sentence.
And this isn't even including now the original charge that's got him locked up in Huskow, and that's the threatening the FBI on YouTube.
That's correct. This is completely independent of those charges, which carry a 15-year maximum on those. So it's really troubling.
He's in deep shit.
President, if I tabbed it correctly without actually looking at these, just going by memory of what the charge is, it's 5 years maximum per count on the 10 aggravated ID theft counts. It is 10 years for count two and 15 years for count one.
Now, the identity thefts, are they alleging that he actually had these credit card information on his computer?
It appears as though they are, either alleging that he had it on his computer or that they can prove that he had them in his possession at one point.
And so that could have been, again, just a case of him transferring a simple link. There could have been a link to that information, and he moved it from one place to the other, and obviously for the period of time that he's moving it, it's on his computer.
Right.
So it doesn't necessarily allege that.
I don't know that that's the factual situation. If that is, he's clearly got a defense to it. Moreover, he's got a defense of he's probably got a defense of knowingly.
Because it seems
really knew these that there was credit cards and access data, and I have trouble believing Barrett knew about, you know, this type of information.
I've made no secret of the fact in Anonymous that Barrett Brown is my best friend in Anonymous, period. And you know, the love and affection between him and I runs really fucking deep. This really cuts to the quick for me. And the Barrett Brown I know would not have had any truck whatsoever with stolen credit card numbers. That's not to say that he would not have even, you know, wouldn't have transferred the leak itself, the disclosure, which included those numbers, from one place to the other. I'm not saying that he would be above doing that. But I certainly can never, ever, ever picture the Barrett Brown I know having anything to do with attempting to exploit those credit card numbers, or even really, I'm sure he wouldn't even want to look at them. The Barrett I know wouldn't even want to, you know, see them. But that's not to say he wouldn't transfer the disclosure. All right, so the link thing, what's that all about? What's the one count that deals with the transfer of the link from one IRC to the other? That's what I've heard.
Right. I'm actually going to look for that that article with the indictment and pull that up. But it's count one is trafficking in stolen authentication features, and the other count that besides the aggravated identity theft is the access device fraud. So those are the the charges at present. But it's this count one that people are, you know, seem to have their jimmies a bit rustled over, and I think with really good reason. And it's because it is so troubling, because it appears that people can be held responsible for this type of crime now, just for merely transferring a link that turns out to be from a hack containing this type of data, these authentication features. And, you know, these access devices.
Well, let me ask you something. Okay, you follow our own account, the PLF 2012 account. You follow a lot of other non-accounts. And it's pretty much a daily thing that I will get information in a back channel that such and such a site, say in Brazil or, you know, Tunisia or Syria or wherever, has been defaced. And then I take that information, including the link to the defaced site, and I tweet it. And in fact, Anonop Sweden, who is a well-known Twitter account in Anonymous, was actually suspended for doing just that. She tweeted a right-wing site, I believe it was in Greece or somewhere, Serbia or somewhere, and it got defaced and tweeted out about that, including a link to the site, and was suspended for it. Is there a parallel there? I mean, are we all breaking the law now every time we report, an Anon account reports on Twitter about a defacement or a data dump?
Well, no. I mean, I understand that the federal government's taking a position that is antithetical to me saying no, but, I mean, no, honestly, It just can't be. It defies logic to think of imposing a strict criminal liability upon sharing links, especially when you don't know and when you don't have an intent to further the underlying criminal purpose of, you know, of the transfer of these links.
No, because what we're all doing is we're reporting news. We're doing actually a lot what Barrett does. I mean, in the case of all these accounts that report these defacements and report, and I know in the case of my own account, I consider it reporting the news. I'm reporting a non-activity, and that's news. And to me, in my mind, that's my intent anyway in doing it. My intent isn't to, you know, in any way further the hack or even have a lot of them. I tweet. I don't necessarily even support, but you know, because Anonymous is a big place and a lot of people support different stuff. But it's news in the Anonymous world, so I tweet it out because that's one of the things we do with our account. But it does seem, I hear what you're saying, that, you know, no, it shouldn't. But what you're also saying is the federal government is basically saying that. I mean, in the Barrett Brown case, if they were to win and hold that as a precedent, then it would, in essence, especially when you combine it with the Reeve case, which is also about essentially accessing URLs, you have a precedent beginning to be set where the simple sharing of URLs that regard any sort of hacking could be criminalized.
Well, here's how I think of it. First of all, there's clearly a speech component to it. There's clearly a free speech component to it. And how that plays out in the courts is yet to be seen. But there's got to be a carve-out, an exception for freedom of speech in terms of transferring these things. They're newsworthy. And to talk about a crime isn't a crime in and of itself. To share a link to this newsworthy source is tantamount, in some regards, to just simply talking about a crime. And likewise with Weave's case. And I think there's a direct correlation between Weave's verdict and Barrett's new indictment.
Well, that's the big concern on Twitter, and that's why you're seeing in the Anon, I think that's why in the Anon world in the last 24 hours since this story broke, that's why that's been the focus, because it's an incredible concern, because there are hundreds, and you know this, Jay, because I know you follow a lot of these accounts, there are hundreds of accounts out there who do this activity every single day. A lot of us are dedicated to informing not only our fellow Anons, but the public on what's going on in the Anon and the cyber activism world. And that is what goes on. I mean, what goes on is, you know, defacements, hackings, data dumps. That's the sort of DDoSes, you know, tangle downs, as they call them. All of that stuff is what goes on. And I think there's, you know, there's just a really lot, a great deal of accounts that are dedicated to informing people on that. It's a very troubling case. Where do you see this going with Barrett? I mean, where do we stand with getting him attorneys, defense fund, all of that? How is that coming? Is there any movement in his defense and his defense fund?
In short, no. Nothing worth reporting on. You know, people close to him are really working tirelessly to see that some private defense counsel is retained. Not any knock on his public defender, of course, who we understand to be a very highly skilled attorney. But it seems as though they're not communicating so well right now, Barrett and his attorney. And this is quite plainly, it's a weird case. It's a specialty case. It's something, you know, it's something that it isn't necessarily so overtly suited for every attorney. So there's a right attorney out there in North Texas for Barrett, an attorney in Dallas or somewhere in the Northern District of Texas, for Barrett that's familiar with those courts, that'll work with, you know, there are many of us, including me, that have said, you know, we'd be glad to, you know, pitch in some of our time, help share our thoughts, even shoulder the load for some of the work. But
it really comes down to the money, doesn't it? It's like everything in life right now, it comes down to the money. And, I mean, I think to be honest with you, people need to pony the fuck up. I mean, people need to step up to this. This is going to cost a lot of money. And I don't know about anybody else, but everybody I've heard, even the people who really didn't like Barrett Brown, are coming forward and saying, look, he's a part of the internet, and our internet sucks with him gone, and we want him back. And it's great to say that. It's great to see all the supportive tweets, man, but I don't know if you're with me on this. People need to start ponying up. People need to start digging deep, and instead of spending a gazillion dollars on fucking Christmas shit, they need to, take some of that money and put it into the defense fund. Do you have a URL or anything where people can go who want to pitch in some change to this?
Well, there's the Free Barrett account, which I think is, I'm going to direct you to that in just a moment. But I agree wholeheartedly with what you said. And I think, organizing something in terms of, there was a fundraiser done for the PayPal defendants and other non-defendants. I think we should probably try to do one just for Barrett himself. It seems to me to be a real good idea to get going with that. But there's, let me give you some details. There's freebarrettbrown.org, common spellings. There's admin@freebarrettbrown.org. That'll get you to the admin. I'm not going to give you the Bitcoin address because there's a hefty Bitcoin address, but there's a WePay. It's wepay.com/donation/free-Barrett, Barrett-Brown. So that's where to go.
But they can get all of that basically at the freebarrettbrown.org website. Is that
correct?
Right,
get the direct links from
there. All right,
there.
So all of you people out there listening to the show tonight, listen the fuck up, all right? Because, we got, coming up on 24 Anons in the United States of America alone that are facing hefty fucking charges, okay? And people need to start stepping up. I think, I personally am going to get to work. I have a couple of people that have teamed up with me. We're going to work on something for Josh. We're going to build him his own website and start something for him. Hopefully after the show you can help me hook up. I'd like to get up with his attorney. I'd like to get it all nice and legal if we can. But, and so we're going to focus on that because Josh was, a friend and a part of my personal group and team within the collective. So we're going to work on that. But people in general, I think, we need to start stepping up. People need to start really digging deep and sacrificing. Because if we don't defend our own, then we're fucking worthless as a movement and as a collective. All right, so I was over at your website, Jay, tonight doing a little bit of research to, familiarize myself with some things. And I noticed that down at the bottom, I'm very honored that you have set up a whole section at the bottom of your front page, right on the front page, of a defense fund for yours truly. And I didn't know that was there. I had no clue.
You did. You did. That was the one we set up at your direction.
Well, I may have
moved about a year or more ago.
Well, a year or more ago, and I didn't think it was. I didn't think it was on your front page anyway. I didn't know that it was even still in existence. So I guess I got to ask. How's that doing? We got $25,000-$30,000 in there yet, or what?
We may be just a hair short of that.
Are you kidding me?
Yes, as a matter of fact, I am. You'd come back if we had $25,000-$30,000 in
there. Oh my God! So, what? Not even a dime yet, or what? What's the deal?
No, I don't. I mean, I'd have to check. But I don't think there's anything at present in the fund. If you remember, what happened is we had a miscommunication, and you set up a competing fund that all of the funds that were driven.
It didn't get any money either. It didn't get any money either.
Went into the competing fund.
So no, it didn't get it. Didn't get any money either. I can trust me. I can tell you. All right. So for those of you who have any affection whatsoever for yours truly, Commander X, and you want to pitch into my legal defense fund to help me out when they eventually capture me and drag my sorry ass back to the United States, You can do that by going to Jay's website. You can also learn all about Jay and his partner, James, and the fantastic work they do, primarily in medical marijuana. Their website is www.LiedemannDivine.com. And if you have a problem with that, just Google it, and it'll take you straight there. But it's LiedemannDivine.com. And if you scroll down near the bottom of Jay's front page, there's a defense fund for Commander X, and maybe consider shooting a few coins in that one, too, because they may eventually catch me. All right, Jay, so you've been sort of affiliated and become actually very beloved, I must say. For an attorney, I'm actually kind of shocked at how much affection Anonymous as a collective has for you. Not that I have anything against attorneys, but I do.
I'm really humbled by that. Thank you. I don't hang out in the IRC, and I don't. It may appear that I spend a decent amount of time online, but I really don't. I'm kind of quick with my tweets and reading them and all that, so I'm not really on that. So to hear that there is some degree of affection out there is really heartwarming.
Oh, I know.
It's nice to know you're appreciated for the things that you do. I would do them anyway because this matters. I think it matters to me, and I think it matters to the world. But that's awesome.
Well, it's actually, I never see any trolling, and I see nothing but kind words and great deal of affection. But there's a big difference between this, which, you know, you've become quite deeply involved in. You've really immersed yourself and seem very determined to become a part of this and to do in your role as an attorney the best you can to help the collective. It's a big difference, though, from medical marijuana. What's it been like for you the last 2 years, being sort of a part, in a way, of the collective of Anonymous?
Well, you know, first of all, I should probably clarify, because we do a lot of medical marijuana work. In fact, we do a ton of medical marijuana work. But I also do a lot of general criminal practice as well. I mean, I handle, you know, murders and sex cases, although I try to limit those because, you know, they're not really as legally interesting, and they're really, really, really not fun to deal with. But all kinds of drugs and violence and theft and things like that. So learning medical marijuana was kind of just, you know, just another thing to learn. I found it very interesting. And what was cool about medical marijuana is because it's an emerging area and it involves personal freedoms, you really get to be there at the forefront. You know, you're kind of the razor's point in shaping the law because you're on the front line of those court cases. And I find it to be much the same with Anonymous. These are all brand new, way newer than medical marijuana, which is 16 years in the making now. And those of us that are doing these cases are really, you know, we are the cutting edge on the legal front. So we owe, you know, kind of a responsibility to those that come behind us. So the last 2 years or so, you know, doing these cases has been pretty amazing. It's an amazing learning curve because I did not have the tech background, and I've learned a ton in terms of technical knowledge that it really takes to handle these cases. And, you know, I've also, you know, really expanded my views in terms of how our speech rights and other important rights fit in the new, you know, digital age and, you know, fit into this digital revolution.
All right. Okay. Now, so take your lawyer hat off for a second. And just be Jay Lederman, human being. What is your true, honest, gut opinion of Anonymous? What we do, how we do it, why we do it, and don't hold back. Don't sugarcoat it. You know, how do you feel about Anonymous as a human? And what we do and what's going on and the things, the actions that we've taken, especially in the last 2 years since you've been involved?
Well, listen, like everyone, I don't agree with everything. Sometimes I don't even agree with most things that the collective is doing. But far and away, I believe at least, Anonymous is far and away the most interesting and important thing going on right now. In terms of an exploration of rights and responsibilities and ordering of our society as it goes forward. Anonymous is doing such amazing things, and it really getting into all spheres of our culture, all age groups, all, you know, all races, religions, creeds, all countries, all corners of the globe. They're doing it, and they're doing it well. And whether you agree with the, I've got my my son just walked in, really tends to take the wind out of a point. But if you agree with everything or some things or most things they're doing or not, you have to agree that they're pushing the ball forward in terms of human rights, in terms of compassion, in terms of thought, in terms of speech, in terms of action, in ways that we really haven't seen in I think, in my lifetime. And I'm glad to be a part of it.
Okay, so we'll close out with the fact that, over personal detail, you are not a completely new dad, but a fairly new father, and we can actually hear your youngster in the background. What's it like to be a dad, and what would you feel like if your son chose to, when he got old enough, become a part of Anonymous? How would that make you feel? What would your thoughts be on that?
Oh, well, he's whining at that question. Maybe he thinks I'm not going to let him be involved. What do you think? Well, first part of that question is really easy to answer. Being a dad's the coolest thing you can imagine. This guy has really changed my life for the better, and he's, you know, just over a year old now, and it has been just so cool. Just so cool, right? Are you having fun? You having fun? Anyway, he's not saying. In terms of the second question, I don't have any hesitation to say that he can do, in terms of his freedoms, to pick, you know, what he wants to believe in, what he wants to protest, what he wants to, you know, what he wants to follow, what, you know, what music, art, culture he wants to be interested in, all of that, he's free to choose that. And if that includes, you know, being a card-carrying member of Anonymous, if there is such a thing, and, you know, whenever he's, I don't know, he's already trying to use the iPad and all of that, so maybe it's next year you're talking about.
That's a sign.
He's free to do it. You know, I would, of course, talk to him about, you know, these things are legal, these things aren't legal. If you're going to break the law in a principled manner, that's a choice you make, and there are consequences for that. And we see that right now with Barrett, with Weave, you know, with you. You know, you're a man without a country right now because of some of the principled choices you've made. And I would hope that he would understand that, and I would hope that everyone out there would understand that. Society is so interconnected now that you're not just a kid in his bedroom in the eyes of the government. You're, you know, potentially a bad actor. So if you're going to break the law for principles, you have to understand that there probably shouldn't be, but there may be presently consequences for it. And as we go forward, those consequences may change, but you have to understand those kinds of things. And if he understands it, you know, I'm okay with an intelligent and rational choice. Now, just don't play this interview for his mother.
Well, I don't know. I don't know what I can do to stop that from happening. Jay,
I'm sorry, I'm not letting him play with the iPad.
Jay, I see that you're a very busy man at the moment. I want to thank you very, very much for your time. I know that the...
Wait, one sec.
Are you there?
Sorry, X.
Don't worry. The listening audience will understand, or at least those that have.
Well, you know, if you've ever had a 1-year-old, and if you don't let them grab the iPad, you get a reaction.
All right, listen, Jay. I want to thank you very, very, very much. I knew you know I sprang this on you at the last minute to come on the air. You took time out of your busy Saturday afternoon to spend some time with me when you could have been spending it with your family. So thank you very much for coming on the air. I hope maybe we can have you on again sometime on Commander X Speaks.
You got it.
All right.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, thank you very much, Jay.
All right, I'll talk to you soon.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
the way I always do. The revelations too. I was gambling in Havana. I took a little risk. Send lawyers, guns and money. Dad, get me out of this. Ha! I'm the innocent bystander. Somehow I got stuck between a rock and a hard place, and I'm down on my luck. Yes, I'm down on my luck. Well, I'm down on my luck. I'm hiding in Honduras. I'm a desperate man. Send lawyers, guns and money. This shit has hit the fan. Oh, send lawyers, guns and money. Send lawyers, guns and money. Send lawyers, guns and money.
Us to a conclusion for episode 2 of Commander X Speaks. I want to thank you all for tuning in. Give a shout out to some of the folks in the chat room. Opno Pro, Kane, Ghost Rider, anybody else who's listening out there on any of the other anonymous radio networks that may have restreamed us. And I want to give a shout out to everybody who listens on the download. These episodes are available almost immediately, probably by tomorrow morning will be available for download. You can get that at my website, commanderx.tk, where the first episode from last week is already available. And I'll remaster this one and load it up just as quickly as I possibly can. It was a great episode. What a great interview with Jay. I think I had some other folks actually in mind this week for a guest, but I sort of changed up at the last second and chose Jay because I just think that this week, it's, as I said before, been just a really awful week for legal stuff. With to do with Anonymous, it's really going pretty badly on a lot of fronts there. So I thought it would be good to have Jay on. He's a wonderful man. As I said at the beginning, he's a personal friend of mine, as well as my attorney, and I've spent a great deal of time with him. and he's fun to be with. We've actually had a little bit of time to spend, just leisure time, just out hanging out and partying a little bit, and he's just a great guy. He's a really fun guy to be around and a dear friend of mine. And I thank him again for taking time out of his really busy day. As you could hear, he was in charge of his 1-year-old son. So he was multitasking while being interviewed. And we learned a lot. I learned a lot, anyway, about these cases. And we see a lot of the surface stuff, you know, because we all follow Twitter and the IRC. And, you know, we hear the rumors and the myths and the... you know, the talk of the town, but to dig a little deeper underneath these cases. And I really hope that that everyone out there that might hear this now and in the future consider, you know, carefully and thoughtfully the situation. These people, and myself included, we all are in, you know, really deep shit for having done the right thing, for having been a part of Anonymous and stood up and did these things that we're being held to account for. And we all of us need help from you all. And so, you know, now's the time to stand up. Now's the time to step forward. And it doesn't matter if it's a, you know, $1, $5, whatever, you know, you can scrape out. You know, maybe buy one or two less Christmas presents and think about, you know, giving to the Jeremy Hammond Fund, who's, you know, again, facing some really desperate charges, Barrett Brown, the PayPal 14. I know over at freeanons.org, there's some great stuff going on over there. You can buy some really cool t-shirts. I even donated a design. There's a free Commander X shirt that is just really fucking cool, actually. I didn't design the image. A friend of mine in Anonymous designed the image for the t-shirt. But you can purchase yourself an absolutely really cool free Commander X t-shirt, or any other number of items over there. So you don't just have to give cash. You can buy some cool stuff. I know there's some similar things going on over at Jeremy Hammond's website. Barrett Brown, we're still sort of working that up. And as I said in the interview this week, we're going to begin working on one for Josh Cavelli, who's also one of the PayPal 14. And in addition to being one of the PayPal 14, Josh is my co-defendant in the attack on the Santa Cruz County website. So we're going to put in a special effort for Josh this week, put up a website and set up a fund for him as well. So give it some thought, you know. Maybe you don't even have any money. That's understandable. A lot of us just have no fucking money at all. But there's other ways to help, you know. Go to these sites and dig in and make contacts and network with these people that are working for these different defendants and find ways to help. There's always ways. There's letter writing campaigns. You can write to the Anons themselves, the inmates. You know, I've done a fair amount of time behind bars myself, and I know that getting a letter, even from a stranger, is a real fucking treat, man, in a world that is basically hell on earth. So give it some thought and see maybe if you can't find a way to do more for the Anons, especially in the United States, who are facing these just really horrible, lengthy sentences and unjust charges. So thanks for tuning in today. We're about probably 30 minutes overtime, so it'll be about a 90-minute show by the time it's done, and I apologize for that. Jay's interview just went long, and that's the way it is. I still haven't quite figured out or mastered how these talk radio show hosts manage to stay within their limit. We went 5 minutes over last week, and now 30 minutes over this week. Maybe I just need to make the fucking show longer, but there was no part of Jay's interview that I could cut out, and so that's just the way it is. We're going to close it out with a song I think is very appropriate, Volunteers. by Jefferson Airplane.
Of America.